Welcome to Business Infrastructure, the podcast about curing back office blues of fast-growing businesses. If you're a business owner or operator looking for practical tips and solutions to scaling your business in a sustainable manner, you're in the right place. Now here's your hostess, Alicia Butler-Pierre.
Hello and welcome to the Business Infrastructure Show, where we share tips and resources to help you cure back office blues. I'm your hostess, Alicia Butler-Pierre, and I'm honored to be joined today by Liz Kislick. Liz is a management consultant and executive coach. She helps family-run businesses, national nonprofits, and Fortune 500 companies solve their thorniest problems while strengthening their top and bottom lines in the process. She's a frequent contributor to the Harvard Business Review as well as Forbes, and has delivered a TEDx talk entitled, Why There's So Much Conflict at Work and What You Can Do to Fix It. Now, if you'll recall, earlier this season, we did a show on how to deliver high-stakes conversations. But today, Liz is actually going to share with us the one thing we need to know about delivering difficult news. Look, as our companies operate through growing pains and growing spurts, developing effective communication skills is a must. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So without any further ado, Liz, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thanks, Alicia. I'm so happy to be with you.
Awesome. Let's get right into it. First, can you tell us a little bit more about what you do at your management consulting firm?
Yes. I work with companies that are experiencing growth or change or actually being stuck and not being able to generate the growth or change they're looking for. And I work with people at every level of the business, depending on the issue, and learn a lot about what actually happens there. And therefore, I'm able to come up with solutions or to facilitate discussions that they're not comfortable having on their own.
Now, one of the things that struck me when I visited your website, which is amazing, by the way, is your client list. It reads like a who's who, and there's such an incredible amount of diversity in the clients that you've worked with. And I'll just kind of rattle off a quick list here. So your clients include American Express, Girl Scouts, Staples, Janssen Pharmaceuticals, Highlights for Children, Saks Fifth Avenue, Warner's Brothers, Citibank. You all get the point. Now, what's most interesting to me, Liz, as I looked at your client list, was not only the diversity in your clientele, but also the fact that this idea of conflict resolution, the idea of delivering difficult news, is a universal issue, regardless of industry, size of company, type of company. As an expert in helping teams work through conflict resolution, I know this is an unfair question to ask, because I'm sure there are so many things that we need to know about delivering difficult news. But if you had to distill it down to one thing, what is that one takeaway that we need to know about delivering difficult news?
So I knew you liked to know the one thing.
Yes.
So I tried to think about how to encapsulate this, and here's where I ended up. It is never a one-way or one-step process, because everybody takes in the news differently, and that won't match exactly what you intended or what you planned.
I like that. Can you actually repeat that? That was really good.
Okay, I don't know if I can repeat it exactly, but I can give you the gist.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's not a one-way or one-step process. Mm-hmm. And that's because everybody's different. And everybody will absorb or not absorb what you're telling them differently. And whatever they take in will not match exactly the things you planned or what you meant.
Well, and I'm just thinking in terms of the type of difficult news that has to be delivered in a business setting. And so many examples and scenarios come to mind. But I'm wondering if we could tie this into business infrastructure using a rather specific example or type of scenario that happens oftentimes in fast-growing small companies. But first, now, if you're listening to this show for the first time, let me first define what business infrastructure actually is. It's a system for how you link your people, your processes, and tools to ensure growth in a profitable and sustainable way. Unfortunately, business infrastructure, and this is part of the podcast, is to change this dynamic, Liz, but business infrastructure doesn't usually get onto the radar of small businesses until they are going through growing pains or some type of a growth spurt. And that's when the realization that there needs to be better structure, better organization. It may even mean hiring more people. It may also mean replacing people, replacing some of those tools and technologies that you're using, as well as processes that may need to be updated. A very common scenario that I've seen in fast-growing small businesses starts off with people. Can you offer us some tips on having or delivering difficult news, especially when we're talking to friends and family who may have started out with us when we started our companies, but then you come to that point when you realize, okay, in order to get to the next level, I really need to bring in people who have experience in different parts of the business. Can you offer some tips when it comes to the people aspect?
Yes. Okay. I want to set some context first.
Okay.
And then go to the specifics, because in exactly the same way you described how small businesses often don't recognize their infrastructure needs.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, that's not just small business. That's almost every organization.
True. Very true.
Okay. But part of why they don't is because they're dealing with what's in front of them. And so instead of dealing with this question just as the next thing, I want to give you a little bit of backdrop so your listeners have a way of thinking about these issues. Because difficult news, there's all kinds of difficult news, but it can be difficult in different ways. Mm. And I just want to give you three general categories first, because your example actually hits all of them. It's a complex example, and I'll show you how. So in the first place, you might have a relatively simple, straightforward category in which the difficult news is that you have to say no to someone. You have to disappoint someone. And that could be that you can't give them the resources they want, or you can't meet their preferences in some way. So disappointment is the thing that's likely to follow. In the second big category, the hard news may actually be something that's very good for the business, but it creates change or disruption for people as they go about their day-to-day duties, the things that they've been used to doing, everything they're comfortable with. So even though there is a good end to it, it feels terrible when you hear it.
Mm.
And then the third thing is a kind of explicit negative impact. There's a problem with you. There's something going wrong in your area, or our top customer doesn't want to work with you anymore. Something that is right away like a big slap in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the business, but it's explicitly about the person too. So the situation you raised, we're past the immediate startup stage. We built the startup on people we know and may actually hold dear. But then to move the business further, we think we've got to bring in people with more expertise, specialization, rank in some cases, that kind of thing. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. So the first thing I would say is that there is a difference, a real difference, between having to bring new people in because you're growing so fast that the people you have just can't handle it. There have to be new people or the business will stall.
Right.
Versus we're bringing in a new person because you haven't been able to get us to the point we need. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the first case, that's the kind of thing where that hits all the bells of my three categories. So the person who's already there may be disappointed. Don't you think I can do the bigger level thing? They're disrupted. I'm going to have to get used to a new person here. And we were so comfortable the way that we were. And they may feel that there's explicit negative impact because this is going to change my relationship to the job and the business. It's going to change the way I spend every day. I'm really going to hate this. Whereas in the second case, there's a little of one and two, but it's really all three. You weren't enough, and so we need this stranger. So that's really painful, painful, both to the person who has to hear it and often to the person who has to deliver it.
Now, what about processes? Do you have any tips for delivering news when there's sometimes a fundamental change to the way people are used to doing something? So it's not that you yourself may be the issue, but we need to change the way that we're doing things in order to handle more volume and more capacity.
Yes. So for making the announcement is only the middle stage of the process. I look at it as a three-stage process. The first stage is preparation, and that's really in the measure twice, cut once school.
Mm.
Think about it and plan for it deeply, because it's not going to work the way you expect anyway, but at least go through what the various kinds of responses might be. And think about how you can cushion a blow, show that there's more upside, figure out which details should be explained now and which later. So there's a whole bunch of prep. That's stage one in the process. Stage two is the actual delivery, which is probably not one conversation. And, you know, we all take in information in different ways. So every business has people who do better in a face-to-face meeting where they can ask questions, even if it's on video. Whereas some people actually do better if they can read an announcement, figure out all their questions in private, and then come back, that kind of thing. And there are some people who really need to hear the message in person and in an email and in the little weekly memo you send to everybody. They need it 12 ways, 47 times. So you've got a really big range in what the delivery might need to be. And then, of course, there is the interaction or the language itself. So delivery is very complex. And then the third stage is actually the follow-up. Because the fact that they now know doesn't mean things will change from their end. The fact that they now know is sort of the start of their process. You've been thinking about it and working on it and figuring out how to get to this conversation, and you kind of feel like now you're handing it over to them. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean they're opening the package. So there's a bunch of work that you need to do afterward to check for damage and help with recovery if the recipient is upset, to keep explaining it if they don't understand it completely, and to check on how it's going once they start the process.
Hmm. Now, before we move on to tools, we talked about people and processes. As I'm listening to you talk about these three stages, preparation, delivery, and the follow-up, I can't help but think, and I'm putting myself in the shoes of not only myself, but people who may also be listening, like, this is a lot of work because there's so many different ways that you can communicate or deliver a message. Just can we talk about that just kind of as an aside? What are some of the different tools or vehicles that we can use to communicate messages or deliver, for lack of a better word, bad news?
So you are spot on, Alicia, because it does take more time and more time than anybody gives it. Mm. And that's why we usually end up with a mess. Most of the time, these kinds of conversations are disruptive. People get defensive sometimes, mm-hmm. or resistant. You can just imagine the crossed arms and the head down and the rolling back in the chair.
Right, right.
You know, all of that kind of stuff. And in many organizations, you then get either overt or covert resistance after the fact. In the example you gave at the beginning of our discussion, maybe what happens is that the incumbents don't reach out to the new person, explain the facts of life to them, tell them, you know, which place has the good coffee, explain to them this is how we deal with client A versus how we deal with client B. They can actually withhold and create a really rough time for that new person.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So,
sabotaging.
Yeah, yeah. And they may not think of it as sabotaging, but that's the impact.
And I think this is where, as you start to grow your business and you are no longer a quote-unquote mom and pop, but you're actually functioning like a miniature publicly traded company, you find that your work becomes less and less about your technical skills or your subject matter expertise and more about your people management skills and your interpersonal communication skills. And I think it's very difficult for a lot of us to make that transition. So again, can you kind of explain to us some of these different modes, I guess, of communication or the different ways to deliver a message? I would imagine, for example, and it isn't funny, but I'm just thinking of horror stories that I've personally witnessed or that people have shared with me where they may be fired via email when that is a conversation that should probably happen face to face. So
yes.
Yeah, so I would imagine there's so many different ways that you can deliver unpleasant news, but it also matters on the person or depends on the person that you're talking to, and to your point, the type of news that you're actually delivering.
Yes, exactly right. And you mentioned the word tools at some point.
Yes, yes, yes.
And the first tool I want to suggest, because much of this is not tool-based, it's more practice-based, but one of your best tools, if you are a leader and have to have a challenging conversation, is actually your calendar. Hmm. Because, and this is so not intuitive, and it's only because of years of this that I see it's the case, because of exactly what we talked about before. you never put in enough time. And you always think you can just say it. And some of us are avoidant and we don't like to say it. So we think, well, if we wait till the last possible minute and say it as small as possible, then we're done, you know? But if you actually treat the conversation the way you would a pitch to funders or to a client, and put in the time and put it on your calendar. You may have to call it something else, but you need thinking time to plan how you're going to do this. And you need time with the individuals, and then you need the recovery time. So I strongly recommend use of the calendar, because then you make yourself responsible to yourself to actually see the thing through. Now, in terms of the message itself and how to deliver it, and what are the best ways, anything that is a challenge for the recipient, if there is any way to start in person, I strongly recommend that. Because you touched on it yourself before, what's at issue here is the relationship. And how are we managing both the managerial and interpersonal parts of that relationship? And that's done best in person. And even if you have to do a kind of all hands meeting and make a general statement and tell them that after this meeting, I'm going to meet with each of you individually to discuss how this will affect you personally, that's fine. That's a wonderful flow, in fact. One of the very important things about this, and something to put back on your calendar, if there is a level between you and the person who really needs to hear whatever this is, you have to first talk to the person in between and make sure that they are on board. Because more things get screwed up because the intermediary managers or decision makers are not fully aligned than even what goes wrong in between the senior person and the junior person. They can stop an initiative dead in its tracks. Not necessarily intentionally, but if they're not aware, not informed, the way they will talk about the issue will not match the way the senior leader talks about it. So that's really important. And, you know, we usually think, oh, they'll just understand. Of course, they'll understand. They're business people. It's a business issue. They will understand. Forget it. Everybody needs personal attention. So the face-to-face is the best. And part of why it's the best is because you have the advantage of your body language as well as whatever you're verbalizing. And they can see if you yourself are comfortable and if you look straightforward and the way you usually do, and if you are open to them versus if you are nervous or seem to be in some kind of defensive crouch. It's tough.
It is tough. And to your point, there's no one way to do it because we're all so different. We're all unique in our own way. And we all have our preferred methods of communication and how we receive news, difficult news.
Yes.
Yes. So this really requires a lot of skill, which kind of is a nice segue to my next question for you. You were talking about the calendar being such an important tool and making sure that you definitely carve out time to not only plan to have the conversation, but to also have the conversation and then plan for that recovery period. Are there any other tools or resources that you recommend, Liz, where we can learn more about how to deliver difficult news and or just conflict resolution in general?
I'm going to stick to some that I think will be helpful in this case and also by extension in conflict resolution.
Okay.
One set of tools that's extremely helpful has to do with self-management. Whoever is delivering the hard news has to be calm and confident enough while remaining themselves that it helps the other people feel as safe as they can, and reassures them, you know, that we're not falling apart here. This is a change. It's not the end of the world. And there are all kinds of self-management, emotional intelligence, self-awareness tools. I like a bunch of different things, and everybody, this is what I keep saying over and over. I'm sorry to be beating this drum. Everybody's different, so everybody will like different things. But there's physical self-management, and I'm sure plenty of people have seen Amy Cuddy's TED Talk that talks about power poses. I think those can be very valuable. Anything that helps you be your most physically confident is important. Similarly, you need techniques for calming yourself internally. We all have chatter going on. You know, there's practically a committee meeting in our heads all the time. And so there are a variety of things that are helpful there. One is just any form of meditation, particularly mindfulness meditation. And you can find that, there are so many. Deepak Chopra has all kinds of stuff. There are apps. There's one called Headspace. There's one called 10% Happier that people can check out. And then there are specific kinds of practices that are great if you're feeling bad, either before or after the process. There's one by Tara Brach, B-R-A-C-H, with the four initials R-A-I-N, RAIN. I'm not going to go through it now, but people can look for that. And there's also a great book by a woman named Christine Neff, N-E-F-F, and that's on self-compassion. And there are useful practices in all of these things that help you strengthen yourself so that you can be simultaneously authentic and on point when you have to deliver, and then you can recover afterwards.
Before we wrap up, and I knew this would happen, this conversation went by way too quickly, but I'm also thinking about some people that I have personally worked with, other entrepreneurs and business owners, and I could almost hear them right now saying, oh, that's just a bunch of fluff, Alicia. That's a bunch of fluff. What do you say to people like that who believe that? And then they have the employee that they fire in a very disgraceful manner who comes back and shoots the place up, and then they wonder why.
Well, let us...
I know
that
was a lot
never
to
happened.
I know, yeah. That was a lot to unpack, and it's very extreme, but a lot, yeah, of times, you know, when you read those kinds of stories, these people aren't handled with care, at least not the type of care that you're talking about.
So in case any of your listeners fall into that camp, let me give a more realistic example. And by that, I don't mean that your example doesn't happen, but that statistically, here's one that happens a lot more, which is that the leader doesn't handle it well. The change happens in a forced sense, brutal kind of sense. Mm-hmm. And it reverberates through the place for years after. The person who was most deeply affected is never the same again, whether they stay or whether they're gone. And their colleagues also learn that this is not a safe place. And there is so much data now. So if people want evidence, there's all kinds of neuroscience and statistical data and financial data about the negative impact when people are treated badly or feel unsafe versus when people do the work to manage themselves. Because you can do all the meditation in the world and still mess up a conversation, because conversations are hard. Mm-hmm. And then you have to have the courage and the spine, not to be tough, but to go back and to say, I didn't handle this perfectly. I'm sorry, when I said these things, I did not mean to indicate those things. And I want to make sure you understand both what my intent was and what we need to do now to go forward. And I hope you will come and play this game with me. So the good thing about it, interestingly, is if you don't behave terribly, you can always go back. If you behave terribly because you didn't care, what comes across is the fact that you didn't care. And then you can go back, and people may listen to you because you have the power and authority. But in the long run, whether or not you can see it, it may have been better for your business. You could still be making money hand over fist, but maybe it would have been more.
Right, right.
You end up leaving something on the table, or some of it is scraped away, even if you don't see anything drastic.
What a great way to summarize all of that. Now, yes, and there's so much more that I wish I could ask you, but unfortunately we are running out of time. I would imagine that your calendar stays booked because of the type of work that you do. How can people get in touch with you?
The best way is really to go to my website, lizkislick.com, and part of what may be useful, in fact, to folks in your audience is there I have a free field guide and checklist about how to manage certain kinds of interpersonal conversations that may be useful, and also there's my weekly blogs, and there's a monthly newsletter, so folks can get access to all kinds of useful information for free. And they can, of course, find me on LinkedIn and on Twitter.
Awesome. And I did want to ask you also about your TED Talk. Can you talk about that for a little bit, please?
Oh, sure. Anything specific you wanted to ask?
Just what is it about? We're definitely going to make sure that we put a link to it on businessinfrastructure.tv, but if you could kind of tell us a little bit more about your TED Talk.
Oh, sure.
That'd be great.
So the talk is really about the fact that we think conflict is something that happens between people. And it certainly does. But it only gets to that point, in most cases, serious conflict comes up because there are other things that are going wrong that are not the people, that are structural or procedural or historical. The people are manifesting it, and it's the parts you see. It's the people who are complaining. The computer system isn't complaining. So you don't know that underneath all these complaints, there's really something wrong with that system, which needs serious work. And in the talk, I go through sort of five stages that you can work through to start improving circumstances so that people don't have to feel so at each other's throats anymore. That have to do with making sure that there isn't really just a bad person or a wacky person who's stirring up the whole sense of stuff, and then gathering the right data so you know what's actually happening, and then getting people's agreement to proceed with a solution, and making sure, just sort of like what I said before, that you have people all through the organization who are signed on to help make the solution work. And then you do have to teach some new techniques for interactions specifically, so people don't fall into old bad habits. And if you work on all those things, you actually move the entire group forward, not just about the conflict at hand, but in how they deal with each other in general.
And I'm looking at my notes and I realize, so I definitely wanted to talk to you about your TED Talk. There was also an article that I saw on your website entitled How to Shift from Asking for Trust to Being Trustworthy. And I was like, let me read this. And I'm definitely going to make sure that we put a link to that article as well on businessinfrastructure.tv. But can you spend a moment just talking about that as well? Because that was so, it ties in my opinion, so nicely to everything that you've talked about today.
Well, I can see you're a deep reader. So the major thing, the one thing about that piece is trust is not something you can require or ask for, because people can't deliver it on command. And so as the leader, what's crucial is to focus on how you will create what Amy Edmondson calls psychological safety. If people feel safe, like you won't get mad at them, won't yell at them, won't penalize them, won't fire them, they will tell you what's not working so that it can be fixed. If they feel safe, they will tell you their new idea because they won't be afraid you'll treat them like they're stupid. And when they see over time that it is safe for themselves or really for other people to challenge the leader, to raise new ideas, to raise questions and problems, then everybody starts to work on things in a much more collaborative and collegial way, and you can accomplish so much more.
Okay, we really do have to wrap up now. I apologize. Okay. See, I just keep reminding myself, like, oh, wait a minute, I wanted to ask Liz about this, and oh, yeah, what about this, Liz?
Send me questions, Alicia, and maybe I'll write, you know, more stuff about it.
Yes, and who knows, maybe it'll become yet another article that you have posted in one of these prestigious magazines. That would be awesome. Or maybe, you know, you definitely have to come back on the show because there's so much more to say about this, but I really do appreciate your time today. This has been wonderful, and thank you so much.
It's been really lovely speaking with you.
Awesome. Well, hang on, because I'm going to give a little summary here, and if I say something incorrectly, please feel free to chime in. So now that we've heard from Liz, do you understand why open, honest, and transparent communication is so important? As a reminder, she said that the one thing we need to know about delivering difficult news is that it is never a one-way or one-step process. That's because everyone will absorb the information that you have to deliver differently. You may just have to alter a message based on the type of news that you're delivering, as well as the relationship that you have with that person. Liz actually gave us three categories for why it can be difficult to deliver, or why it can be interesting, I should say, in delivering difficult news in different ways. The first category was that you have to actually say no to someone. And that can lead to disappointment for the recipient of the news that you have to deliver. The second category is that the hard news may be something that's good for the business, but it may actually cause disruption, again, for the recipient of that message. And the third category is that it can have an explicit negative impact on the person that you're communicating this news to. And that is, the implication is that there's a problem with you. Liz also talked us through some of the people, the processes, and some tools in delivering difficult news. When it came to people, she said that there's two things that we need to take into consideration. As we're going through growth spurts, it could be that we're bringing in new people just to be able to handle the volume. It could also mean that we're bringing in new people because the existing people that we have simply can't perform to the level that's required. From a process perspective, she actually told us that there are three stages to take into consideration. The preparation stage, delivery stage, where you're actually announcing or delivering the news, as well as that follow-up stage. You have to allow time to check for recovery from the message that you may have just communicated. That was really important because, as Liz mentioned, one of the most important tools that you can have in delivering difficult news is, in fact, your calendar. You have to take time to plan how you're going to deliver the difficult news, deliver the news, but also allow for that recovery period as well. And as a wrap up, she said at the end of the day, everybody needs personal attention. So be careful how you treat people. People can't deliver trust on demand. If you don't take the time to carefully craft your messaging and deliver it, you can end up leaving a lot of money on the table. If you're going through a growth spurt or you're having some type of a shakeup in your management, or you may even be going through a transformation initiative at your company, contact Liz so that you and your team can get refocused and back on course. She can be reached at lizkislick.com. That's LIZKISLIK.com. As a reminder, we will have links to the resources Liz shared in the show notes at businessinfrastructure.tv. Did you know we have a YouTube channel? Yep, that's right. You can now find this show as well as other how-to videos on YouTube. Just go to businessinfrastructure.tv and look for the link. When you get to our channel, be sure to subscribe and click the notification bell so that you'll know when the next episode airs. Thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, stay focused, be encouraged. This entrepreneurial journey is a marathon and not a sprint. Until the next time.
Thank you for listening to Business Infrastructure, the podcast about curing back office blues with Alicia Butler-Pierre. If you like what you've heard, do us a favor and subscribe, leave a rating and review, and more importantly, share with your colleagues and team members who could benefit from the information. Join us next week for another episode of Business Infrastructure with Alicia Butler-Pierre.